Robinhood Radio presents Flavor Matters with Serge Matakians. He's the owner of Saravan Restaurant in Armenia. If you can't find him in the kitchen or gardens, then follow him either on Facebook or Twitter at Saravan NY.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. This is Serge from Saravan Restaurant and Flavor Matters, continuing my podcast on Armenians and Armenia. And I'm continuing my conversation with Dr. Sharon Chekichian, who is an emergency medicine specialist teaching and working at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. Thank you for staying with me, Sharon.
Thank you, Serge.
So Sharon, we spoke about your being an Armenian with an Armenian father and an American mother from New England, Boston area. You were inspired in 1991 to go to Armenia and begin to study Armenian language. You not only studied the Armenian language, the Western dialect of the Armenian language, but since 1991, you have traveled several times to Armenia. And you just recently, in mid-May, returned from, if I'm not mistaken, 3 months or 6 months of stay in Armenia, where you conducted you were there because of a Fulbright scholarship to study the Armenia's emergency response program. Did I mention this correctly? Do I have the facts correctly?
The facts are correct. I didn't stay for 3 or 6 months. Unfortunately, I was there for a month and a half.
Okay, six weeks.
I'll be returning again twice over the next year and a half to work on the project. But otherwise, you got everything perfectly correct.
So one of the things in our previous conversations, and I have listened to some of the interviews that you have given since then, what came about since you've sent in your application for the Fulbright fellowship, a war broke out and a pandemic hit the world. And here you are in Armenia in the middle of the pandemic and in the middle of the war with Azerbaijan, which really complicated enriched your research. Please tell us what your intentions were when you went there, what your hopes were when you first submitted your fellowship application, and what you confronted when you went to Armenia.
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, I've been going to Armenia since 1991. Actually, on my first trip, when I left Armenia at the airport, somebody said to me, "Hope that we're a free country sometime." We landed actually in Paris. And I found out later we were one of the last planes to leave from Armenia because the coup happened in the Soviet Union. And so I actually landed in Paris and Armenia became an independent republic while we were in flight. Just so compelling. And I think that's really what's kept me going back to Armenia all these years, is really watching this transition from a Soviet republic to a free republic, and just all of the nation building that's gone on since that time. It's just been such an exciting time. And I have to say, I've kind of grown up, you know, with Armenia in my mind. So I remember every stage, you know, every year. And you said I've been back several times, but I've been back every year, almost without exception, sometimes a couple of times a year.
Well, I was not aware of that. And Sharonjan, just to put it in perspective, if you don't mind, 1991, were you in medical school? What was going on for you personally in 1991, 92, in that period?
Yeah, so in that period, I was actually just finishing college. I was not a medical student yet, not even a pre-medical student. I did return back 92, 93, and 94 were extremely hard years for Armenia. I think almost nobody traveled during that time. There was no electricity. Water was zhamirov by hours. as you recall. And it was just a difficult time. And so I was next able to go back in 1995. And at that time I was a pre-medical student. And so I went to work with an organization called Land and Culture. And to this day, many of my friends are people who were involved with Land and Culture, actually sort of a dedicated group of people that have similarly to me sort of grown up with the country and the nation and watched its evolution. And I actually lived in a village called Gogaran, which we can talk more about because I know you want to hear about emergency medicine. But suffice it to say, you know,
can you just very quickly let our listeners know why Armenia didn't have water, why Armenia didn't have electricity or nor gas?
Well, many, many reasons. I mean, I think the fall of the Soviet Union with a centralized economy really threw, you know, all the republics for a loop, Armenia included. You know, we had one nuclear power station, which is the source of energy. Water, you know, has a lot of issues, you know, with water supply because we're a landlocked country. And so water needed to be rationed and everything. I mean, the whole economy basically ground to a halt because if you can imagine in the Soviet Union, every republic was tasked with producing certain things. And Armenia's specialty was really chemicals and cognac. I think those were the two things that we mostly produced and everything else had to be brought in. And so when that system broke down, you know, all these networks had to be reestablished, and that took some time. And it also took time for the economy to be rebuilt.
Right. So, and if, am I incorrect that the gas pipe and electricity were cut off on purpose to pressure Armenia?
At least I don't know. Maybe you know more about that subject than I do. It's possible.
That's what I was told on my visit, because the gentleman that took me around, Baron Somved, Mr. Somved, told me about how they endured those difficult times. And for our listeners, it's important to remember that Armenia has distinct four seasons. It's got very hot summers and very cold winters. So a lot of the trees were cut down. A lot of people used their doors that were wooden doors to heat their homes. To me, I just want to say that to me, it's a testament to the grit of the people there that were able to survive that very, very, very difficult time.
Yeah, it was such a hard time. And when you're saying that, I'm remembering those difficult times. And actually, my husband to this day, you know, in Connecticut, we have a lot of electrical storms, as you know, living in that area near Litchfield. Sometimes, you know, we'll lose power. And when we lose power, it brings back all these memories of not having power for so long, you know, having to boil water to take a bath, which was difficult. And you're right, some people even used wood to boil the water. And it was just, it was such a difficult time. And I think for a nation that's already gone through, you know, genocide, gone through really difficult times, you know, World War I, World War II, this was, you know, another trial and tribulation for the Armenian people, certainly. I mean, most people have a difficult time actually talking about this period, and they do call it the bad times, Vajramanagnir.
Vajramanagnir, exactly. And I remember having conversation with many people on my recent trips there, especially the elderly who witnessed it, and they were young and they had to protect their family. So we survived, Armenia survived, and Armenia has blossomed now. And here you are, a Fulbright fellow. You find yourself in Armenia in 2020 and 2021. Working on the emergency response. Tell us what, to our listeners, what that entails, first of all, emergency response.
Sure.
And tell us the complications that you confronted when you are dealing with this, trying to figure out the model, but here you are in the midst of a war and in the midst of a pandemic.
Yeah, so I feel like I keep on backing up. So, but I am going to back up again because I think what's important is, you know, all the projects that came before this project. You know, over the years, I've had the opportunity to work on a few different things. My first project ever was working on organ transplantation and donation. It was my medical school thesis, and this was a fascinating project looking at how people considered brain death, if they would actually donate kidneys to their family members, to others. And this became like a very intense exploration of, you know, society, what was going on in the medical field. And it really intrigued me. The next project I worked on was actually looking at CPR. And I had very close friends and family members who had had cardiac arrest and had a difficult time and did not survive because the EMS system was not prompt in responding to their emergency. And this really prompted me to do a study actually through the Coca-Cola World Foundation and the American University of Armenia. And we looked at people's willingness to perform bystander CPR if somebody collapsed near them, and also looked at the readiness of the emergency system. After that study, I worked on trauma care. And I always tell people, you know, everything that I've worked on has really been something that's important to me personally. And CPR was obviously important because I had family members who and friends who didn't survive cardiac arrest. But trauma care and traffic safety was important to me because, as you know, from being in Yerevan, it can be challenging to cross the street even. And so I wanted to sort of delve into why that was. And we did a great project looking at people's willingness to use seatbelts or lack thereof, child safety, seat usage, pedestrian right of way, respecting that law that pedestrians could cross unencumbered on a street. And then most recently, I started working on stroke care with a group called SIATA, and I am the emergency medicine representative to that group. And I started thinking, okay, all of these projects and everything I've done up until this point, it really involves the emergency medical system. And without improving that, we won't get improvement in any of these areas. And so I sat down and I wrote the Fulbright Scholar proposal back in 2019 and submitted that. And what I propose to do is work actually on curricular development to educate emergency physicians. Emergency physicians, you know, in the world really didn't exist until the late 1960s, 70s. And a lot of countries around the world actually don't have emergency care as we think of it in the US. And that it really includes Armenia. Armenia is sort of like in the middle of the line with emergency care because we do have ambulances, we do have an organized medical system, and we actually have doctors that staff the ambulances, but none of them are trained in emergency medicine. They're all from different specialties like cardiology, pediatrics, surgery, trauma surgeons.
They're like the doctors that are on call. So if there's an emergency, you may a doctor will go on the ambulance, but it may not be the doctor's specialty.
Yeah, it's definitely not the doctor's specialty. So everything that they've learned has really been learned on the job, which, you know, this has happened in every single country that has subsequently developed emergency medicine. So I don't mean it in any sort of a disparaging way. But what my proposal is to do is to really kind of leapfrog, you know, into the future and give those doctors that basis of emergency medicine knowledge that will really help them to care for patients in a more effective way. And we don't want to do away with the system right now, which is that doctors go to houses, because that's incredible. And we really don't even have that in the US. We have paramedics, we have medics, but there you actually have a doctor that comes to the house, and only about 20% of patients are actually transported to a hospital after that time. So it's quite different from here, where 100% of people, when you call the ambulance, or 99.9% will be taken to the hospital for treatment.
Right. Sharanjan, we're coming to an end for this segment, but you've created a wonderful segue onto a story that I would love your sharing with us, about your mother-in-law and the ambulance call that she had to make while you were in Armenia. This is Serge from Serevan Restaurant. I've had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Sharon Chekichian, who has just returned from Armenia. She is an assistant professor at Yale University, and I hope that you will tune in to listen to our next podcast. Thank you, Sharon, for joining us.
Thank you, Serge.
Flavor Matters is a joint production of The Serevan Restaurant and Robin Hood Radio. For more information on The Serevan Restaurant in Amenia, New York, serevan.com on the web.